It is Thursday, November 18th, episode 179, Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. Excited. I didn't plan this, but episode 180 is going to be rivalry week, the beginning to the greatest rivalry in all of sports. So get excited. Buckeye fans, Michigan fans, the Wolverine Nation, whatever you want to call yourself. What an awesome 2 weeks of college football we have left leading into championship week. Conference championship week is one of my favorite weeks, and we'll talk more about it when we get there because it's just so different than anything else. It's not bowl prep where you have a month to prepare. It's not a regular season game because a championship is on the line. And so we're going to talk about that when it comes time. And if you haven't yet, I'm going to plug it every time because I really am excited about the work we're doing with this platform through charity, the Zone 6 Fund, where we are going to try to sponsor some Columbus City kids that don't have the financial means to get athletic development at an elite level. We want to pay for it. The Zone 6 Fund through the Earl and Jean Bruce Charitable Benefits. Already had people reach out about donating. I got a meeting next week down in Columbus to meet a couple kids. And so really, really excited about it. Going to train over at Plus 2 with Eric Lichter, who's one of the best in the industry. If you're interested in that, reach out, zach@menace2sports.com. But speaking of championship week, we have our squares. Our squares are an unbelievable fundraiser, and it's fun. And you get a chance to gamble. I mean, to possibly win some money while supporting charity. It's awesome. So you pick a square, you just buy a square, and then randomly it gets assigned. You'll get a winning score number, losing score number. It plays in all five conference championship games, and then the numbers will change, and it still will play in the college football playoff three games. So you get 8 chances to win times 4 is 32 chances to win for $100. So go ahead and hit a Venmo at Cameron Media or shoot me an email and get on the squares board. But the other charity, charitable event that we're doing, the last one of the year, final home game, Buckeyes take on Michigan State. We got your preview, analysis, predictions at the end of this show. Also going to have Mad Dog DeMarco, Dave Mad Dog DeMarco, East Lansing's best sports media, sports radio personality, going to come on and give us a feeling of what is going on in East Lansing as Mel Tucker is on the verge of becoming a $100 million man, which is wild. We're going to talk about that, talk about the vibe in East Lansing with old Mad Dog, and then come hang out with us at the tailgate. Charging on Lane, Braxton Miller and myself will be there supporting both our charity that I just talked about and Braxton's charity, the Braxton Miller Foundation, which does a number of things. At the Point on Lane, right next to Varsity Club, people have been. I read a couple complaints about the price. I don't know if people are confused on what the value is. It's a covered tailgate, a block from the stadium, unbelievable food from Revelry Tavern, Shade on the Canal Wings, Giant Eagle. Drinks are flowing. You get 2 drink tickets, and then they're only $5 for drink tickets after that. So it's way cheaper than what you will spend at Varsity Club or in the stadium. I mean, your total bill at the end of the night will be far cheaper than anywhere else you could go on campus. And you get to hang out with Braxton and I. There's TVs. If you don't have tickets, come watch the game with us. It's been awesome. We've had 3 so far. The Penn State was unbelievable on Halloween weekend. This was going to be awesome too. The tickets are already popping, so we got a couple days left. Grab your tickets on Eventbrite. Come hang out with us. And I got to play for you. One of our sponsors, MyBookie, right? You use the promo code Menace, free deposit match. If you haven't signed up yet, you put money in, they give you free money. Simple as that. And you can bet anywhere in the country. You go on, and my play tonight is Patriots -6.5. The Falcons are not going to cover. They're not going to come within a touchdown of Mac Jones and this Patriots team. So go ahead and lock that one in. And if you heard this show too late, after that hits, we'll have another parlay another play on tomorrow morning show. So come gamble with us, man. Come go jump on my bookie. Use the promo code. It's super easy to use. You can do it on your phone, do it on a computer. Doesn't matter. Go to mybookie.ag, promo code Menace, and place a bet with us, man. -6.5 Patriots to rock on this Thursday night. And if you do need gambling advice as you use MyBookie, head on over to Menace to Picks. Our handicapping service is the cheapest in the market and the best, the highest success rate. For $15 a month, you can get all of our infinity locks. Sports gambling is fun, man. I didn't realize it. I'd never done it before, and I started doing it. And it's fun because even if you bet with discipline, you'll never lose a lot of money. You might lose a little bit of money in a week, but the entertainment value is amazing. I mean, I'm watching Mac games like they're the Super Bowl. I mean, you just get so much more into it. My girlfriend is obsessed with it. She loves to bet on the who's the first player to score a touchdown? Because you throw $5 on it or $10 on it, you could win 50. You know what I mean? And then she's sitting there rooting for the, and she gets into it. So if you want to do it, I'm telling you, if you have a girlfriend or even if you don't, it increases, it enhances the viewer experience. It really does. It's a blast. And as long as you're smart, if you do it as a way to try to win, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, you could lose thousands, right? That's what it is. I mean, I've won that much, but you can also lose that much. So anyways, come check it out. MyBookie, promo code Menace. Check out Menace to Picks if you need some expert advice to help you pick your picks. And a lot on this episode, we're going to talk about this awful, awful Zach Stacy video, who I've never heard of, but it doesn't matter who he is. Just the fact that it happened was atrocious. And we'll talk about that. Talk about Jameson Williams, because Twitter is just exploding at me and every one of my platforms about J-Mo. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the two big games of the weekend, right? Oregon, Utah, massive implications on the national landscape. And then also the biggest game in the Midwest this weekend, Ohio State, Michigan State. I got a deep, deep, deep analysis and dive into this one. So get ready for it. Buckle up. Enough about that. Let's get to the show.
What a hit. Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller, blue spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
First things first, this Zach Stacy video. So I didn't know who Zach Stacy was. Never heard of him. They said former NFL player, and he was like a guy that had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Former running back from Vanderbilt. I guess played in the NFL for a year or two, like a lot of players do, right? Short-lived career. But the video comes out. This guy is a fucking psychopath. Holy shit! And I'm not encouraging you to watch the video because it is it. I'm shook after watching it this morning, and I haven't went back to see it again because it's unbelievable. I mean, the violence that he attacks the mother of his child with it's sickening. Like I'm still sick about it, and it's absolutely horrendous. I don't even know what else to say about it. The point I made in our Menace group chat from our Patreon Menace subscribers was like, how could you have that a bone in your body that would want to hurt someone in that fashion, let alone a female, let alone the mother of your child, as your child is sitting there? Not only that, but what do you get out of that? Like, does that make you feel better? I can't fathom it. I really can't. Like, the maddest, because I can have a temper at times, and if I get really mad, I just leave. I just get in my car and go and say, you know what? I'm not dealing with this shit right now. I don't know how you get to that point where you would harm someone, especially someone that you care about or at one point cared about. It's just bizarre. And I know that's probably odd for some of you to hear coming from me because of allegations, and that's the other thing. I'm disgusted that my name and things that I've quote unquote done is lumped into any kind of category that's even remotely close to what that fucking scumbag and horrible piece of shit did. And I know that stuff happens. I domestic violence is a very, very real thing. And what, like, that is, I mean, I don't even know what to say about it. Like, what should his punishment be? I don't know. Like, death by, you know, stoning? I mean, that's just awful that you could put someone through that trauma. But, and not to get off my, not to stand on my soapbox, but it's equally awful when you falsely accuse people of doing something like that. Like, I'm telling you right now, I'm not capable of doing that to a human. I mean, I guess if someone hurt one of my children, that might be a place that I've never been. That might put me into a place I've never experienced, and I can't speak on that. Or if someone hurt one of my loved ones, maybe then I could really lose my shit. But not on a female, even in that situation. Good God, it's just awful. But if someone did that to one of my daughters or my sister, man, God forgive what I did next. I'm just watching that video. I don't know that woman. I feel awful for her, and I feel so disgusted for him. And if that was my daughter, boy, I'm gonna tell you right now, you can go ahead and call the police, because I'm not gonna let that slide. That is horrible. So I just wanted to address it. It's in the media, and not sure why my opinion matters, but I felt like, you know, with the things I was accused of, I should probably talk about it. I mean, you need to bring light to domestic violence, and I'm not against that. I think it's an unbelievably necessary thing to talk about and address. Domestic violence. And the problem is this, right? And it's a lot like it's in this, all these things that it's basically, you know, social injustices, right? It's domestic violence, it's sexual harassment, sexual assault, racism, all these things, right? There's such a horrible situation going on in the world because, and in my opinion, it's because of false accusations that now it's a train wreck mess, right? Because if that video didn't exist, and he came out and said she was lying, a lot of people would believe him, right? And why would they believe him? Well, because there's been so many examples, like Dave Portnoy, where he's sexual assault. Well, he has receipts that say otherwise, right? And I committed domestic violence. Yeah, there's no evidence of that. And there's a lot of people that beg to differ that I didn't commit domestic violence. People that would know, right? And so many things, right, have happened where it gets disproven, and that you lose credibility in real situations because of those false accusations. And now, I mean, I guess thank God that it's on video, because he can't lie about it. I also agree with a friend of mine tweeted about cancel culture. Like, cancel, the term cancel culture is also used by guilty parties to hide their guilt, right? To lie about what they did, right? If someone was racist and they, you know, there's not concrete evidence about it, they can just blame cancel culture for the fact that people are calling them racist, and they feel like they get a get out of jail free card. So it's a disgusting time we live in with all these half-truths, lies, truths that people don't believe. It's just created a lot of doubt in society. And in my opinion, it's all on the media, because the media has allowed blatant lies to go forward without repercussion, right? In the end, when it's proven a lie, there should be repercussions. The woman that wrote that article about Dave Portnoy should be arrested, right? Or she should be never be allowed to work again in journalism. And the woman who's making those accusations should be tried for a crime. I'm not trying to make this a show about that, but it's just, it's so sad to see this world going this direction. It really is. And I feel awful for the victim, his baby mama, girlfriend. I don't know what she is technically, but it's an awful situation. So put that to bed. I just felt like I needed to address it because I have strong feelings about that part of the world, I guess, that part of society. But moving on to something almost as volatile on Twitter is the Jameson Williams came out and said that he don't rock with Ohio State fans, just like they don't rock with him. To paraphrase, he said something about they disown me, so I disown them. I think I talked about it on the morning show. Definitely, if you do feel that way, don't say it publicly. Now you're ostracizing fans that didn't, right? And it's also, to lump all Ohio State fans together is ridiculous and unfair. There are certainly crazy ones. I've seen a bunch of screenshots that were like, man, he ain't shit. He ain't going to do shit at Bama. Like, okay, those ones I get. Like, yeah, I also think this is also a kind of a Michael Jordan moment for him to create his own, in his internal monologue, to create an edge, a chip on his shoulder. But here's why Jameson Williams matters, and I'm not going to stop talking about it, because one, I think he would be dynamic in this Ohio State offense, even with the three great receivers we have. But for some reason, we don't believe in a rotation here. Brian Hartline doesn't, Ryan Day doesn't, I don't know who doesn't, but they don't believe in it, right? And you're going to get guys like Chris Olave that maybe legs are a little tired because they're playing so many snaps. That's so many miles on a Lamborghini, right? You can only drive a Lamborghini for so many miles, and then it starts to fall apart. That is what Chris Olave is. He's a Lamborghini. You can't tell me that Jameson Williams couldn't have a role and couldn't play 35 snaps and get 6 touches a game. You can't tell me that with what I'm watching him do at Bama. And the number one reason why Jameson Williams matters is because of recruiting. When he is the top receiver taken in this draft, Alabama will use that relentlessly against Ohio State. They will, for not rotating guys. They, like, damn, they couldn't even get a first rounder on the field. Or the other side of it will be, yeah, they, I mean, he had 9 catches the year before. Then he came to Bama, and we developed the shit out of him. And look at the year he had. Biletnikoff finalist, top receiver taken. I mean, the recruiting narrative that will spin off of this for Alabama, you can't even imagine how positive it is for Alabama and how negative it is for Ohio State. You just can't, unless you've been in that space, in that world of recruiting. It's going to be a huge deal, the success he's having. And I'm not saying that Ohio State fans should have rooted for him to not be successful. Obviously, I mean, the kid played for Ohio State, made some big catches in the college football playoff. And I mean, you obviously root for his success, but I also think that that whole narrative, like, oh, well, I, you know, wish him the best, you know, but he wasn't going to play. Well, that's just absurd. He should have played. Whether he's better than Jackson Smith and Jigba or Chris Olave, it doesn't matter. He's dynamic. He presents a skill set. He should have played. You never want to let a first rounder walk out the door, ever. The only time I can see it being acceptable is a quarterback, if you have two, right? Because that kid's never going to, you can't play two of them. You can't rotate them. A receiver? Never do you let a first rounder walk out the door. How about rotating some guys? Can you imagine Chris Olave, how much better he would be if instead of 70 snaps or 60 snaps, he played 40? He would be that much faster and more explosive when he touched the ball. He would be a better version of himself. That's just what it is. I mean, study after study I've went through when I formulated my attack plan as a receiver coach. The other thing that's not being mentioned is you damn sure don't want to play his ass. You want to go play Bama in the first round of the playoffs and your secondary has to cover that kid? Fuck no. You don't. I'm telling you, you don't. You absolutely do not. So, in my opinion, huge, huge, huge error by Ohio State. And you will not convince me otherwise. And honestly, you can't provide good reason why, other than, well, Jackson Smith and Jigba's really good. I fucking know that. I watch him. I'm not saying he should have played over him. But I will also make the statement, and I'm not going to go too deep into it, but Jameson Williams would not be the fourth best receiver on this Ohio State team. He just wouldn't be. Let's call it what it is. Anyways, got to move on. Let's talk about the clash on the West Coast, Oregon at Utah. Huge game for the national landscape. Huge game. And when you look at these teams, there's a couple differentiation points that I see when I watch them on film that makes me believe that an upset might be coming, right? First and foremost, you look at defensively, right? The passing defenses in the Pac-12 in general and Utah and Oregon, who have two of the better defenses, is really, really, really poor. I mean, Utah is 10th in the Pac-12 in completion percentage, so they allow a lot of completions, right? Oregon is 11th in the Pac-12 in yards, passing yards per game, so they allow a lot of production, right? And the main reason for that in Oregon, I think, is because teams throw it a lot on them because they have one of the best rush defenses in the Pac-12. They only allow 3.5 yards per carry. But they also aren't great at stopping teams throwing the ball, which makes that Ohio State loss even more sickening, kind of, right? But the good news for Utes fans is this. Oregon hasn't been throwing that ball well of late. They've averaged in the last two games 115 yards passing, and they're 9th in the Pac-12 throwing the ball through, you know, over the course of the year. So I don't know that Oregon is going to be able to throw it on Utah that effectively, because Utah's just okay on pass defense, and Oregon is just okay throwing it. But I think Utah gains an edge in the throw game, because they're the fourth best passing attack in the Pac-12. So I think that when you look at throwing the ball on each side of the ball, I think Utah has the edge there. They're going to be able to throw the ball a little bit better in this game than Oregon is because of the matchup. And then you flip it on the other side, not the other side of the ball, but the other side of offense, right? The rushing attack. Like, how will they be able to run the ball, right? Utah has the best rushing attack in the Pac-12, almost 6 yards a carry. I love the 1-2 punch they do with Tavion Thomas and, if you don't remember him, TJ Pledger, the former Oklahoma Sooner. Now, Tavion was held out of the Arizona game this past weekend, and they deemed it precautionary reasons, but you would imagine that was to ensure he was 100% for this matchup. So with or without him, I think they have a great chance to run the ball. I mean, TJ Pledger had a huge game against Stanford 2 weeks ago and filled in nicely for Thomas against Arizona. So I think this rushing attack for Utah will be able to, you know, make some headway on the ground. But similar to Utah, Oregon has a dynamic run game. I mean, 5.6 yards per carry and 31 touchdowns already to date. Travis Dye has been carrying the workload ever since CJ Verdell's season-ending injury in the Stanford game. I think he broke his leg or whatever it was. Lower leg injury. Travis Dye's had 9 touchdowns the past 5 games. He and the quarterback, Mario Cristobal, does a great job with the quarterback run game and some of the read stuff he does. He and the quarterback, Anthony Brown, they formulate Mario Cristobal's rushing attack, and they've been really, really efficient on the ground. They do a great job. And obviously, Cristobal's an O-line coach, so he's going to do a great job in the run game. You know that. And then you kind of go to situational offense defense, right? Oregon and Utah have both been outstanding on third down offensively. But Utah has been excellent getting off the field on defense. The best third down defense in the Pac-12 separates a differentiating point here over Oregon, who's in the middle of the pack, play on words, on money downs, right? So I think Utah's third down defense is a differentiation point. Mark that down. Both teams finish drives decently when they get in the red zone. Oregon besting the Pac-12, 73% touchdowns, and both teams are pretty good at finishing in the red zone. Another differentiation point, though, Utah's defense, again, has an edge. They only allow 50% touchdowns in the red zone. When teams get in the red zone, Utah does a great job of bowing up, creating that brick wall, and not letting teams score. Oregon is near the bottom of the Pac-12 at that. When teams get in the red zone, Oregon doesn't do a great job of keeping them out of the end zone. They really don't. When you look at fundamentals, it's a lot like the Big 12, right? Utah has they both have solid defenses, but they both fundamentally are poor, and I can't understand it. They're good football coaches. I mean, what are we talking about? Utah, I mean, that's been their mantra, right? Is a great tackling football team, blocking. I mean, they are fundamentally sound. But this year, Utah averages 11.8 missed tackles a game, and Oregon averages 11.4 missed tackles a game. So expect an electric game. That's all I'm going to say. When you look at quarterback play, like, that's the final straw, right? Anthony Brown, the kid at Oregon, he's efficient and less pressured. Both of them are, really. 24% drop-off when he's under pressure, 47% completion percentage over 10 yards. He is what I've deemed this year as a sandbox quarterback, right? Intermediate throws, where do they go? Is it spreading the field, or is it in the little sandbox where your kiddie plays, right? In the middle of the field, 10 to 20 yards. 34 of his intermediate throws are in the middle of the field versus 24 outside the hashes. So he has a lean to throw it more in the middle of the field, both schematically and his comfort level. You flip it over to the other side to Utah. Cameron Rising is similar in some ways. He's worse under pressure, similar to Brown, but worse. 36% drop off when he's under pressure. But the difference is Utah does a better job in pass protection. He's only under pressure, quote unquote, six times per game. He's 53% over 10 yards, so a little bit better, but he's far more equal distributing the field. It's almost 50-50 outside the hashes and inside the hashes in the sandbox, right? He really spreads the field on those intermediate throws, and I think he has an edge in this game. I really like Utah to pull off this upset at home. And then lose in the likely rematch in the Pac-12 championship game. But I think Utah pulls this upset off. So if you're a better, bet it up. If you're a tracker, track it. Track my picks. I would love to know what my record is. I know it's outstanding. But I'm taking Utah to pull off this upset. At home, big game. Make no mistake, Utah's a good football team. And I think Oregon is going to struggle defensively a little bit. So that's my prediction. The other game I want to mention before we get to the big one, the big daddy, I want to talk about Iowa State, Oklahoma, because I think Oklahoma might have a chance to lose two in a row. And we're going to find out about we already found out about Caleb Williams, right? He got benched. He's not an Heisman candidate. But now he got benched and struggled and lost to the 81st ranked pass defense in the country going into the game. Now, he's got the second best passing defense in the Big 12 coming to town in Iowa State Cyclones. Top 25 in the country. They're fourth in the Big 12 with 8 interceptions. This is a different beast for this kid than Baylor. Or Texas Tech, for Christ's sake. They also have the second-best rushing defense in the Big 12. This will be a monumental challenge for Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma Sooners. It really will. You look at Iowa State's offense, they have an efficient throw game, complete 72% of their passes, solid run game, over 5 yards a carry, and Oklahoma hasn't been able to run the ball the past 2 weeks. I mean, 2.8 yards per carry against Baylor, 3.6 yards per carry against Texas Tech. I know Kennedy Brooks can be a good player and is dynamic at times, but this run game is just, it's average, to be honest with you. I think this is another exposure game for Oklahoma. Brock Purdy was on a 5-game streak without throwing an interception as quarterback from Iowa State. 5 straight games he didn't throw an interception. He got sloppy last weekend in their loss to Texas Tech. He threw 2. I think he tightens that up. And Iowa State pulls off this upset. And if you want to be safer and take the 4 points and be a pussy, have at it. But I'm rocking with the Cyclones coming out of Ames, Iowa, to come into Stormin' Norman, Oklahoma, and force Lincoln Riley to play his third-string quarterback, maybe, right? Maybe Oklahoma has 3 Heisman Trophy candidate quarterbacks, Sooner Nation. So I'm taking them. I'm taking Oklahoma to lose at home to Iowa State. So there's my first two predictions. We're going to get to Ohio State, Michigan State right after this. And also Mad Dog DeMarco is going to give us the vibe in East Lansing. But before we do, let's get a quick word from our sponsor and something I'm really passionate about when it comes to mental health, BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check them out at betterhelp.com/menace. And I mentioned this before, is a big deal for me because of my own mental headspace and trying to improve myself every day mentally. The best way I think about therapy is analogies, right? Like, we get our cars tuned up to prevent bigger issues down the road, right? You saw it coming, you heard the noise, right? So this is sometimes about maintenance as opposed to fixing a problem, right? We get annual checkups and go to the gym to maintain physical wellness and prevent injury and disease. We do chores so our house doesn't become a train wreck, right? Going to therapy is like all these. It's routine maintenance for your mental and emotional wellness to prevent bigger issues down the road. And this BetterHelp platform is unbelievable. They have licensed therapists. It is safe. It is secure online. You can do it through Zoom. You can get help right at your home and you know, in with discretion. Like, no one has to know if you're worried about it. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Like, why invest in everything else in the world and not in your mind and personal well-being, right? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Menace to Sports podcast listeners, you get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/menace. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/menace. I'm encouraging you to check that out. I really am. It means a lot to me, and I've checked it out, and it's awesome. I mean, it's awesome. You talk about, if you're nervous about it, you're shy about it, it's the best. You don't have to see anyone. If you don't want to, you can. It's really good. But let's talk about this Ohio State-Michigan State game, mostly focusing on what is this team coming to Columbus, Ohio in the horseshoe. And we'll be watching it at the tailgate. Second plug, come hang out at the tailgate. Eventbrite, get your tickets. First of all, Ohio State offense, a lot to do right now, is the triple threat in zone six, right? Might be the first time. I think it's only happened 7 times in the history of college football. 3,000-yard receivers, and only the second time in the history of college football that if it hits, that there'll be 3 1,000-yard receivers and 1,000-yard back. You know, most of the time it happens is like Hawaii back in the day where they just threw it every play. I mean, Jackson Smith and Jigba already has 1,000 yards, 1,027 yards. Garrett Wilson's 187 yards away with plenty of games to play. Honestly, Chris Olave might be the one that doesn't get there based on his yards per game average, which he's been getting more touches lately, so he probably will. But if based on his average alone, he'll need more than 4 games to eclipse 1,000 yards. And right now, Ohio State has 4, you know, if they win the national championship, they have 5 games left. So he would get it in that scenario. The guy that's kind of the odd man out in this offense, which is unfortunate, is the guy I was so high on going into the year, Jeremy Rucker. I think he would be a Mackey Award candidate, finalist, maybe even a winner at almost any other school in the country. But those 3 receivers and Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams, they limit his touches. Just an update on, for those of you that don't know, Travion and Mayan Williams are the 1-2, best 1-2 punch in the country. Not even close. But did you know, I always give you a fun fact, right? Did you know Mayan Williams leads the entire country in yards after contact per run? He averages 7.5 yards per carry. 5.03 of those yards every single run are after contact. Number 1 in the country. Like, meatball activated. You talk about a hard runner, powerful runner, tough guy to bring down. He is a hell of a 1-2 punch for Travion, who's more explosive and more of a finesse back. But he can still run hard. I don't want to knock Travion and call him a finesse back. But very different backs. Remind me of Thunder and Lightning at Clemson. CJ Spiller and what was his name? I can't remember his name. But just an awesome 1-2 punch, especially now Mayan's healthy and playing. Ohio State is also the only team in the country with 2 of the top 10 after-contact rushers in Power 5 football. Mayan number 1, Travion number 7 at 4.7 yards per carry. And then Kenneth Walker III is 5th. So we're going to see 3 of the most dynamic running backs in the U.S. of A. in the horseshoe on Saturday. If that doesn't fire you up, I don't know what will. So the reality is this, right? Michigan State's defense is hot garbage. They're last in the Big Ten in total defense, 9th in scoring defense, 4th in rushing defense. The best offense they've faced, Michigan, Maryland, they all averaged over 4 yards per carry, right? They're last in the Big Ten in passing defense, last in the United States in passing defense. They allow 330 yards per game to average offenses. That's their average. Ohio State is probably one of the best pass offenses in the country. So partly because they're decent at stopping the run. Teams game plan to attack them aerially. They do. They're seventh in the Big Ten in yards per pass attempt. The most passing attempts against a Big Ten defense. Second most is Ohio State. And they have 100 less pass attempts than Michigan State does. That means teams throw it on them a shitload because they see the weakness and they don't want to deal with the rush defense. Michigan State's secondary is just fucking awful. I mean, they're just awful. And you look at it, I mean, it's all Mel Tucker portal guys. Ronald Williams is a Louisiana kid, went to Alabama, didn't get on the field, transferred to Michigan State. Chester Kimbrough, another Louisiana kid, went to Florida, didn't get on the field, transferred to Michigan State. And then their slot corner, Darius Snow, is a 2019 three-star safety out of Texas. So he's not even really a corner. But that trio right there, they're starting three corners. 170 targets, 109 catches for a 64% completion percentage, 1,200 yards receiving, and 6 touchdowns. Fucking yikes. Darius Snow, how about this one? Darius Snow has the third, their slot corner, Darius Snow, has the third worst reception rate in all of Power 5 football. He allows almost 80% completion percentage in the slot. Like, hello, Jackson Smith and Jigba. You ready to have a day? Because this is a mismatch of the century. Ohio State's most productive receiver is in the slot. And the third worst defender in college football is going to cover him. Whew, watch out. I think the biggest challenge for Ohio State will be in the red zone. Obviously, they bounced back last weekend. But before that, they have been struggling mightily. And I think this red zone defense from Michigan State's the real deal Holyfield. Because I know they bounced back last week. But Michigan State has the second best red zone defense in the Big Ten and the eighth best red zone defense nationally. They only allow 42% touchdowns in the red zone. Think about that. If a team gets the ball inside the 25-yard line, they score less than half the time a touchdown. That's outstanding. And I think that's going to be a contention point. Ohio State's going to need to continue what they did last week, which was running the ball, right? CJ Stroud is just not that quarterback where he's going to drop back on some red zone pass schemes and dot up some windows. Not yet, at least. And the reality is in the red zone, you need quarterback run and the kid just won't do it. So I like their game plan last week. They're going to need to bring a fire game plan this week. Be interesting to see what Ryan Day does. And then the other one's money downs, right? The number one third down offense in the Big Ten in Ohio State should not have a problem keeping drives alive against this defense. They are 11th in the Big Ten at 40%. And as we mentioned, they can't stop the pass. So flip it over to the other side of the ball. There's all these advanced analytics coming out. I saw one, a bunch of fans were tweeting about Ohio State had like the second or third best defense based on points per drive or some nonsense. Here, I don't give a shit about any of that. I mean, we talk about that stuff because it's indicative sometimes of things. But I look at this. 113 missed tackles in 10 games. That is an average 11.3 missed tackles a game. Last year, they had 82 in 8 games for 10.3 missed tackles per game. So that is the Kerry Combs era, 10.3 and 11.3 missed tackles per game. Let's rewind. 2019, 6.9. 2018, 7.1. 2017, 5.8. 2016, 6.3. 2015, 6.5. 2014, national championship year, 7.4. Single-digit average missed tackles every year the last, 7 years before Kerry Combs and this staff took over on defense. It's just bad. And spare me the advanced analytics or point per drives charts. And we could say, oh, they're getting better. They have improved a little bit. They were just atrocious before. 8 missed tackles Purdue, 8 missed tackles Nebraska, 11 missed tackles Penn State, 8 missed tackles Indiana. So it's been better the last 4 weeks, but it's still almost 9 missed tackles a game, which would be the second highest total in the past 8 years behind last year when they were terrible. When I evaluate tackling, here's what I looked at, right? I set a threshold, 300 snaps played on the year. If you played less than that, you're not as consistent a contributor, right? The worst tacklers in space. I also throw D linemen out because those tackles, it's hard to miss those tackles, right? That they're usually in a phone booth. Worst tacklers in space, 7 Banks. Almost 30% of the time he needs to make a tackle, he misses the tackle. Lathan Ransom, 26%. Cody Simon, 18%. Taraja Mitchell, 17%. How about I'm trying to be positive. Let's be positive. How about the best tacklers on this defense in space? Denzel Burke, 90% tackle success rate. 90% of the time he gets him on the ground. Ronnie Hickman, 90% tackle success rate. And surprise, surprise, Steel Chambers, 88% tackle success rate. The three best tacklers on the field. And when you look at pass rush, because I think that's going to be key in this game, Tyreek Smith is the more impactful pass rusher at DN than Zach Harrison. Isn't that crazy? The kid with the five-star, all the hype. He averages 4 QB pressures per game. Zach Harrison averages 2.7. And obviously, they only got one on Aiden O'Connell. That has to change. Now, the top two sack masters on the team and the key to victory in this game, not victory, but the key to making this a dominant win, my man Tyleek Williams, and Haskell Garrett. And I'm going to tell you why in a little bit, but they're dominant inside in a pass rush situation. But we got to, Ohio State's going to have to pressure Peyton Thorne. That's what's going to have to happen. They had a streak going, but Aiden O'Connell made it a non-factor. Michigan State throws a ton of quick throws and launches it deep. That's what they do, right? But the streak that they had going, 5 sacks against Maryland, Ohio State did. 5 sacks Maryland, 5 sacks Indiana, 4 sacks Penn State, 5 sacks Nebraska. They were getting to the front of the pack nationally. And then Purdue, 0. Only one pressure, let alone a sack. But the Peyton Thorne analysis is in. A ton of bootlegs. He's going to get under center and fake that stretch zone action to Kenneth Williams III and roll off of it with some easy comebacks and flats and overs. But the key is you got to stop the run game, limit that play action, and then you got to pressure his ass. You have to. When he's not pressured, he completes 70% of his passes with a 4-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. When he's pressured, he drops 30% to 40% completion percentage with a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. So pressure is the key. The other thing I thought was interesting that was just evidentiary of my point that they're kind of a quick game and deep ball throw game, right? Little boots and play actions, and then they launch it down the field. That's what they do. They don't really throw intermediate balls. Per game, Peyton Thorne throws 5 deep balls, 4 intermediate balls, 10 quick game throws, and 6 screens. Usually that number should look like a Christmas tree, right? Small number deep, a little bit bigger intermediate, a bigger than that, quick game, and then a small number again in screens. Like CJ Stroud, he averages 4 deep balls a game, 9 intermediate throws, so the number gets bigger, 23, you know, under 10-yard throws, and then 4 screens. It looks like a Christmas tree, right? Small number, medium, big, small. That's what it should look like. But Peyton Thorne's lack of intermediate throws exposes their offensive game plan, right? Hand it to Kenneth Walker, throw quick games and screens, a lot of times to Kenneth Walker, and then launch it deep. That's what it is. 16 of 25 balls that Peyton Thorne throws go under 10 yards. And then 20% of his throws are shot plays. Now, I'll tell you this, he hits them. Now, we'll see if they're at full strength with Jaden Daniels and Jalen Naylor, because those are their two really fast guys. I think they're going to need to be to have a shot in this game. But he's 46% on deep balls for 11 touchdowns and 4 picks. It really, he launches it and they go get it. He's also on a 5-game interception streak, though. He started off the year with 1 interception in his first 5 games. Since the first 5 games, in the second 5 games, right, the last 5 games, he's thrown 7 interceptions, 7 in 5 games. He threw 1 in the first 5. So teams are figuring him out a little bit, right? When you look at coverages, I thought this was an unbelievable stat that just kind of echoes what I've been saying all year. Cameron Brown is one of the best corners in the country, and if he's not on the field, I want to know why. He has the second lowest reception percentage in the country, behind Michigan's corner, DJ Turner. 37% reception, completion percentage when they throw at Cam Brown. DJ Turner's 36%, so he's right there. So I think that's a huge stat. Huge stat. Can Ohio State stop Michigan State in the red zone? That's the next question. They have the second best red zone offense in the Big Ten. A lot of that is because of the run game. Kenneth Walker, they do a great job. They also do some unbelievable hard play actions, and they pop some wide open touchdowns against the worst red zone defense in the Big Ten, right? The 109th best red zone defense in the country is the Buckeyes and the Silver Bullets. It's almost 70% touchdowns when teams get in the red zone. Just bad. It's just bad. But the key to the game for the Silver Bullets, obviously, is stopping Kenneth Walker III. He has more yards after contact than all but 7 players in the country, right? If you take the top 7 players in the country in rushing yards, Kenneth Walker has more yards than all of them after contact. Not total yards, but after he's hit. It's absurd. But here's the key to stopping Kenneth Walker. So this is why the show's a little late today, is I went back and studied these games. Nebraska and Indiana, they stopped Kenneth Walker. I mean, Nebraska, 19 carries, 61 yards for 3.2 yards per carry. Indiana, 23 carries, 84 yards for 3.7 yards per carry. And I'm going to tell you why. Here's how they stopped him. And this is why Tylenol Williams and Haskell Garrett are going to be crucial to stopping Kenneth Walker and trying to have a performance like we had against Melvin Gordon in the 2014 Big Ten Championship game. First of all, Michigan State's interior O-line stinks. They do. Pass pro, run game, doesn't matter. Their center is awful. He might be the worst center in the Big Ten. He really might. Nebraska just beat the shit out of their interior O-line. That's how they stopped him. The D-tackles dominated the inside and were constantly disrupting Kenneth Walker on their stretch zone plays, right? It's a huge day for Haskell Garrett and Tylenol Williams. Book it. In pass rush and most importantly, in disrupting Kenneth Walker. They don't even need to tackle him. They need to beat the shit out of those guards in that center and disrupt his path and let the other guys run to the ball. Indiana, very different plan, right? They stacked an 8-man box all day and had extra hats everywhere and forced Peyton Thorne to throw it. And he struggled. 54% completion percentage for 126 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. It's honestly a miracle they won the game. Side note, when you watch the film, watch out for flea flickers. Michigan State loves flea flickers. Hand it to Kenneth Williams and he tosses it back and they launch it. So watch out for that. And then the third phase that I've neglected all year, and I don't know why, this is a huge part of the game that I always talk about every other year I have, is the special teams. Parker Fleming, and I've said it once, I'll say it again, outstanding hire by Ryan Day. What they're doing on special teams is exceptional. It's great. They don't have a punter that's worth a shit, but other than that, they're doing an outstanding job. The good news is, let's do some fun facts. One is, they rarely punt the ball. They average 2.4 punts per game, which is the second least in college football. They punt the ball the second least in the country behind Oklahoma. And thank God, because they had the 88th best net punt in the country, 41.6 yards. Flip on the other side, Michigan State has the most impactful punt team in the Big Ten, 48.2 net punting yards, which is seventh in the country. They also lead the Big Ten with a 21.2 yard per average on in punt return. They have two punt returns for touchdowns. Now, OSU is 10th in the Big Ten at 5.6 yards per return. So I look at net impact of the punt return units, right? Ohio State's net is 47.2 yards. Michigan State's net is 69.4 yards. That is a 21.8 yard differential per game. And if you look at the percentage chance of scoring touchdowns or scoring points as you move incrementally down the field every 10 yards, that is the name of the game. Anyone's odds of scoring significantly go down the further back they start, right? That's why teams' goals on offense a lot of times are to get two first downs and punt it, right? And then stop them and get the ball back on the short side of the field. Like, that's how you win games. That's a 22-yard differential between Ohio State and Michigan State just in the punting game. Now, kickoff reception, different story, right? The average point that a returner catches the ball against Michigan State is the 3.8-yard line. Almost 70% touchbacks. Ohio State, 4.4 yard line with only 25% touchbacks. Now, the total kickoffs, KOR, field position impact, right? The average starting field position without a touchback for Michigan State is the 25 yard line. Ohio State, the 36 yard line. So let's project this impact over an entire game, right? Punt return, 52 yards Michigan State. They gain 52 yards in the punt return game over the course of a game, right? Ohio State gains 33 yards in the kickoff return game. So the total special teams field position impact is 20 yards in Michigan State's favors. That's important. That's not a landslide. That's not like a huge differential, but Michigan State has the edge in the kicking game mainly because of Ohio State's punter. But the X factor. Noah Ruggles, tuggle my bubbles. The X factor is Noah Ruggles, the field goal kicker. Perfect 16-16 on field goals. Perfect 57-57 on extra point. Compared to Michigan State's Matt Coughlin, who became the starter mid-year because the other guy couldn't make field goals either. He's only made two-thirds of his field goals, 66.7%, and he is perfect 37-37 on extra point. So I would say it's kind of a wash special teams-wise. Emeka Egbuka, I don't even talk about it. Emeka Egbuka is the top returner in Power 5 football. He averages 32.1 yards per return, and he's the only returner in the top seven average-wise without a touchdown to inflate his average. Like, you rip off a 100-yard kickoff return, your average is going to be much higher than what you normally get your team. He doesn't have a touchdown, and he's still the top returner in Power 5 football, right? He's the only returner in the top seven without a touchdown. So, outstanding impact player right there in Emeka Egbuka. So wanted to throw special teams in there. In the end, I think Ohio State covers. This defense cannot stop CJ Stroud in the passing attack. Ryan Day will have a great game plan for him. Going to be interesting to watch how this defense can handle a great player. I don't think they've played a really great player like they might have to play in the national landscape, but they're going to face one in Kenneth Walker. I think the D tackles are key, and I think we're going to, those corners are going to get tested down the field. I just hope Cameron Brown plays the whole game. So that is my analysis, but now we need to bring in my good friend, Dave the Mad Dog DeMarco, from all the way from East Lansing, to give us kind of his insight into what is going on in East Lansing. And it's become an annual tradition to have my good friend, Dave Mad Dog DeMarco, come on. He is up in East Lansing Sports Radio. I go on his show pretty much weekly, especially in football season. He's an awesome dude. I love going on his show. Great dude to talk to. And to give us kind of insight into Spartan country amidst a huge contract. You know, Mel Tucker, this is a must-win for him to kind of have the magical season that he wants to have to get to Indianapolis and have a chance to win a Big Ten championship in year two. What's up, Mad Dog? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Coach Smith. How you doing, man? Yeah, this is for all the enchiladas here at 12 noon total leather in the horseshoe. You coached there many times. You know what it's going to be like for players that aren't accustomed to being in front of 107,000 people. Spartan Stadium is 75,000.
Yeah.
And, listen, at the beginning of this season in August, nobody had a snowball's chance in hell thought that Michigan State would be in the position they are in the top 10. They were number three when the bowl poll first came out. And, the situation with Michigan coming back, and by God, they took they cut the cake and won the game. And but the next week, they knew the situation with David Bell and walk-on quarterback, and they just couldn't get it done. Defensively, they scored 29 points, Michigan State did. And Naylor, of course, has been out since the Michigan game with an injury to his right hand or right wrist, and he's I don't know if he's questionable. I know if he's going to be there because they keep the injury report so close to their vest. But the bottom line is now, a lot of chatter around here on the couple sports radio shows, Tim Stealth's show and the Mad Dog show, my show, is about the rumor, innuendo, and the factoid and the possibility of not losing Mel Tucker to another school or whatever the situation may be, and the possibility of him, inking a 10-year contract that would pay $95 million. I mean, it took Nick Saban seven championships, college championships, to get that kind of Zorta.
Right.
And, you got a guy there that you coached with, that he's your friend, and Ryan Day, and he's got to be saying, you know what? If this guy signs this contract before this game, it's going to be a slobber knocker and a half. It's going to be Katie bar the door because, you know what? I'm like 8 years younger than him, so I'm going to be like I guess Jed Clampett was looking down at Milburn Drysdale at the Commerce Bank, because that's what they'll be doing, bringing Brink's trucks to Day's house. But the situation is this, man. I mean, you're there. You coach there. You know exactly the lay of the land. Your credibility is perfect, and the players there. A lot of these guys you helped recruit and knew they were on the charts. Day has done a hell of a job. He hasn't lost a Big Ten game. Michigan State's an 18.5-point to 19-point dog, road dog. And, defensively, they're going to get what would be the word? I'm not going to say schooled, but they're going to have to have their A game, the whole game, and play a perfect game. And that is almost impossible, unequivocally impossible, to play a perfect game in this kind of venue, this kind of atmosphere, and against these kind of players. On both sides of the ball, offensively, Ohio State's number one in the country, Michigan State's 20, which is all right. And they have Kenneth Walker III, transfer from Wake Forest, and he is a Heisman hopeful. Michigan State has never had a Heisman guy, Ohio State's had the only guy that won them back to back in Archie Griffin. So I'm looking at Stroud, the three receivers, and you and I spoke on the Mad Dog show, and Henderson, and whom else they're going to plug in. And Day is just doing a magnificent job recruiting across the country and bringing all these blue chip guys in, and knowing he's not there to push baby buggies. You're there to play football for the Ohio State. On the other side, Mel Tucker's done the same thing. He brought, you know, he really combed the transfer portal. He got almost 40 new players. Like I said, Kenneth Walker, Peyton Thorne was a D'Antonio recruit out of Naperville. Jaden Reed played high school football with him, transferring the portal to Western Michigan. But offensively, they can stick. Defensively, that's going to be the challenge. It really is.
There's no doubt.
Xavier Henderson's a possible, you know, NFL player. Their pass rush has been non-existent. You know, the DBs have been like scarecrows with hula hoops. But as far as the pass rush, they're going to have to try to get to Stroud. That's just the way it is. Special teams could help Michigan State, but there's a reason why that number is so high. Michigan State's number 7 in the AP, and they're in the top 10 in the college football poll. Ohio State knows they got to win out. I mean, that's just the way it is with the one loss that they had. They play Michigan and Ann Arbor next week. So I just look at Michigan State's, you know, against Penn State, they'll have a better chance. They go 10-2. I'm not throwing the white flag up. I would never do that. But I'm just being realistic here, you know, talking to a former Buckeye coach and a guy that's grown up there, and his grandfather was Earl Bruce. You know what the culture is going back to Woody and everything that had gone back. These guys aren't going to be playing around. These guys are going to be foot to the throat right out of the tunnel. And Michigan State, you know, will be ready as far as, I think, mentally, because Tucker is a great motivator. He was on Jim Tressel's staff for 4 years, a young guy. When they won a championship against the U and Willis McGahee, when D'Antonio was on as a D coordinator. So the bottom line is, I mean, who's gonna show up big time? And I just think offensively, they just this might be Ohio State's best offensive group they've ever had, going back to Archie and Corny Green. And, I mean, you know, all the players they've had.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And so I did a segment on my morning show, I think Monday or Tuesday, because obviously I live this. I mean, you could almost call it a rivalry with as many times as Michigan State has spoiled Ohio State season in the last 10 years. And just talked about the impact that Michigan State has had on the Ohio State program, right? Going back to the Urban Meyer's first loss after going 24-0 in the Big Ten championship game, then spoiling the 2015 repeat season. And not only that, but Pat Narduzzi's defense in 2012 and 2013 being the main driving force for Urban Meyer to hire Chris Ash and run the same defense because it was that dynamic. And so the impact that Michigan State has had on the trajectory of this Ohio State team, I don't know if Ohio State would be where they are without, you know, the successes that Michigan State has had against Ohio State. I know Ohio State feels like Michigan State is a thorn in our side, especially in a year like this where, oh, shit, Michigan State's good. Ohio, you know, Ohio State's defense is a little suspect. What's the feeling in East Lansing about Ohio State? Is it reciprocated?
Well, I mean, I look at it like this. I mean, I'm 62. I was there in the stadium in 73 when I was in ninth grade when Levi Jackson had that 88-yard run. And they had to call Wayne Duke, and Tom Scaldini told me later in life when I was on doing sports radio now for 25 and a half years that Woody was so upset he took one of those metal chairs and stuck it in the erector of the stadium in the locker room. He was so pissed off. Jim Taubert was the defensive lineman that stopped, I think, Champ Henson, and he was my grad assistant phys ed teacher in ninth grade at Lansing Catholic Central, so I had a little bit of a deal there. You know, once I was in sports radio, I really, you know, got acquainted with Art Schleister. He did sports radio down in Las Vegas before he got into all his trouble. So he sort of talked about him. I was a big fan of Archie Griffin, big fan of all the linebackers, that Cousinall and Marcus Merrick and Spielman. And the biggest kingpin in my lifetime, one of my all-time kings, was the Assassin. And that guy's name was Jack Tatum. And I was fortunate enough to interview Jack Tatum two or three times because I love the Raiders. And, you know, the culture was there. I mean, Woody Hayes, you know, and then when your grandfather came into it, I mean, he just kept it up and kept it up. And they've always had kingpin teams. And then Tressel, you know, takes over for John Cooper. And Cooper couldn't beat Michigan, but he still was a real good coach. And, you know, somewhat like Harbaugh is right now at Michigan. He's won. He just can't beat, on a consistent basis, Michigan State, and he can't beat the Ohio State.
Yeah.
And I look at, you know, Fickell came in. Everybody was suspect. He's another one of your friends. He was a stopgap between Tressel and Urban Meyer came in. Fickell did a good enough job, and look at how he catapulted him to Cincinnati, and they're right in the mix for a Final Four. And, you know, Ryan Day, like I said, he hasn't lost a game yet. The rivalry, they always say Michigan and Ohio State. And, you know, I was at that game that you coached when Michigan State came back in the Big Ten Championship when they had legends and leaders and Connor Cook and Mumphrey and all those guys. I mean, you know, Carlos Hyde and Braxton Miller were playing backyard football for three quarters.
Yeah.
Michigan State came back and won that game. And, you know, there was a sea of, you know, red and scarlet and gray in the stadium in Indianapolis. And, you know, yeah, D'Antonio did well. I mean, he just did. I mean, that first game that you guys coached, Braxton Miller, I think was a freshman. I saw him get hit so hard. I was on the sideline. He got right back in that game, and they won the game by 1 point. But you were on probation. You couldn't go to a bowl game. Yeah. And then, you know, then Urban did it. I mean, you got a ring through the thing. The situation with you was unfortunate. In the situation how Urban Meyer, you know, left under duress. And then they just handed the keys, the Cadillac, over to Day, your friend. And it's just been, you know, not looking back. I mean, they just keep winning. And he's a young coach. You know, I mean, young. I mean, Mel Tucker's 49. This guy's like 41, 42 years old.
Yeah.
His guy, and he's not a messing around kind of guy. No. He's not a guy that's going to order from, you know, this side of the menu and that side of the menu. He knows what he wants. He knows the kind of players he wants. These younger players now, they want to go there out of, you know, eighth grade, whether they're in Homestead, Florida, or Hallandale, Florida, or Las Vegas, Nevada, or Rancho Cucamonga, California. Then you got the transfer portal that you can deal with bringing people there. Listen, I'm not saying there's no way in God's name that Michigan State can win, but they're going to have to play a perfect game, and I just don't know if the Buckeye team is going to let them play a perfect game.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I know you got a show coming up, so I don't want to keep you too long, but I appreciate you coming on, Mad Dog, as we do every year during this Michigan State week. I wish you a safe trip to Florida as you go this weekend, and I'm sure I will be on your show here in the next week or two.
Yeah, and when I come back, and listen, have a great time, and tell Braxton Miller, always will be a fan of his. I mean, unbelievable player, and then he, you know, had to go to the wide receiver position. Great athlete, and, you know, like I said, I've always been a Big Ten fan, and how can you not like Ohio State? You know what I mean?
No doubt. Well, I need two things from you before you get off of here. One is I need you to drop an F-bomb as a career radio personality. You can't say it, and now you're on air where you can say it. So I need you to do that, and I need a score prediction.
All right. Well, the fucking score position is like, I would say right now, Ohio State 42, Michigan State 28,
mm-hmm.
And I'll be fucking way off on that one. But, you know, the over and under 68.5, yesterday it was 66 and a hook. And, you know, like I said, Michigan State can score points as if they can fucking stop Stroud. And, I mean, everybody's saying this about Kenneth Walker III and his Heisman, and he has been great. How about Stroud? He's thrown 30 touchdowns.
No doubt. There's no doubt. There's no
doubt.
Well,
listen, thanks for fucking letting me come on your show today. I appreciate that.
Anytime, Mad Dog. I appreciate you, man.
Okay. All right, Coach. Take it easy, buddy.
We'll see you.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye. My dog, Mad Dog, got a few F-bombs out of his system. I know he wanted to get that done because he can't do it on the radio. So appreciate Mad Dog for joining us. Always a pleasure to have him. If you're in the Michigan area, I go on Mad Dog, his radio show, once a week in the afternoons in East Lansing. I don't know if you can stream it, but either way, awesome radio show. Appreciate him coming on. Great weekend of college football, man. Make sure you come hang out at the tailgate. Go get your tickets now. Kids come free. I should have said that at the beginning of the show. Hope you're still listening. Kids come free. Bring your kids. They don't need to pay for anything. They can eat for free, drink for free. They can't drink alcohol, but they can drink pop and water. And come hang out with us, man. It's going to be a great time. Really excited to watch this weekend. And then we're on to the final week of college football regular season. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you for hanging out for the last hour. We'll see you in the morning on the morning show and next week on the recap. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you're entertained. And if you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.